We're doing the book of Shoftim. We're up to what's called the 11th chapter. And again, our focus is on the eastern side of the Jordan, the 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan. And we meet up with a man named Yiftach. His father, Gilad, he has many children, and he has a child from a wife from another tribe. The Navi calls him the wife of a prostitute, Ben Isha Zona. But really, we have on tradition that he was simply from a different mother, from a different tribe, and at this point, this was frowned upon. So they looked at it that way. And even though technically this son should have inherited his father like any other son, illegitimately his brothers chased him away. And here we see a similar story to what we saw before, the flip side of what we saw before. Beforehand, we saw one brother, Avimelech, murdering all of his siblings except for one, and then taking the throne. And here we see all of them pushing one away. It's like a flip story from the previous story. So Yiftach is told by his brethren, get out of here, you're from another wife, you will not inherit. And they kick him out of town. And Yiftach starts having a following. But his following are empty people. But he has his gang, he has his band. And now the Ammonites have attacked the Jews on the eastern side of the Jordan. And the elders of the territory of Gilad come to Yiftach to help them in their war against the Ammonites. And they tell Yiftach, come, you be general in this war against the Ammonites. And Yiftach says, you? What's wrong with you? You elders, you hated me. You chased me out of my father's house. Where were you when I was being treated improperly? You're the elders of the town, right? Where were you when I was being kicked out of town by my brethren? Now that you need me, you come to me and say, you're one of ours, be our general. So they tell Yiftach, you're right, that's why we came to you, but you be our leader, you'll be the leader of the people of Gilad. And Yiftach says, if I'm coming back and Hashem allows me to be victorious, of course I'll be your leader. You don't have to tell me that, of course that's so. But I want you to accept now. You're accepting me. Now that you're asking me to lead you out to war. So the elders say, okay, Hashem will be witness that we will do as you've said. And Yiftach returns and they appoint him as the leader. Notice again in contradistinction with Gideon. Gideon was modest. After Gideon was victorious at war and they wanted to appoint him as king, Gideon says, not me, not my son, not my grandson. No, God should be your king. Yiftach is the antithesis of that. Yiftach walks in and says, I am your king before he has done anything. He says, you want me to lead you, then accept me as your leader before the war. And they accept. They have no choice. And Yiftach sends messengers to the king of Ammon and he says, what do you want from me? And the king of Ammon says, you took my territory when you came out of Egypt. Give me back the territory and we'll have peace. You guys thought it's a new concept, land for peace? All I'm asking is give me back my land. So Yiftach says, but that's not true. We were forbidden by God to take Moabite and Ammonite territory. We traveled, and then we conquered the territory of Sichon and Og, and we went around your territory, and the territory of Sichon and Og is the territory that we have. Now, what's really behind this argument? Years before we came there, Sichon and Og had a war with Moab and Ammon, and they conquered part of their territory. So now the Ammonites are saying, let's go back a few hundred years in history. Once upon a time, this land was ours. And what Yiftach is saying is, we didn't take it from you. We took it from Sichon and Og. We took the territory of the Amori. God forbade us from taking your land. Now, why don't you do simple mathematics, he tells them. If we destroyed the Amori, and the Amori were stronger than you, why do you think you're going to destroy us? And he says, you know, it's been 300 years. Where have you been these 300 years? I've done nothing wrong to you. You're being unfair to me. God should judge between us. And the Ammonite king is stubborn. He's not willing to listen. And so God settles his spirit on Yiftach. And Yiftach leads the way to war, and Yiftach takes a vow. Now Chazal tell us Don't take vows. God doesn't like vows. Even if you're going to keep your vow, God doesn't want you to take a vow. But Yiftach takes a vow. Yiftach is not a learned person. Our sages say from Yiftach we learn a very important concept, that if you want to be extra pious, you can't do it without being learned. Because Yiftach is going to make a fatal error, as we will see. Yiftach says, God, if you give me the Ammonites in my hands, so then the first thing that comes out to greet me when I return in peace from the Ammonites, I will sacrifice it before you. And Yiftach goes to fight the Ammonites and he is victorious. He destroys 20 cities of the Ammonites. He not only wins the war, but he follows them into their own territory and destroys 20 cities. Yiftach is returning home. He's made a promise. And what is the first thing to come out to greet him? It is his daughter with her tambourine. And she is the only child he has. He has no son or daughter. And when he sees her, he tears his clothing and he weeps. And he says, my daughter, you've destroyed me. I swore to God and I cannot return from my vow. I have promised that the first thing that comes out to greet me, I will sacrifice before God, and you've destroyed me in being the first to come out to greet me. And she says to her father, if you've taken a vow, so do what you've promised, being that God gave us such a victory. But one thing, give me 2 months, let me go down to the mountains, let me weep over the fact that I am going to die without children. And he gives her those 2 months, and after 2 months, she comes back to her father, and he fulfills his promise. And every year, the girls would go down for 4 days, they would go down to weep over the daughter of Yiftach. What did he do to her? So here there are two opinions among our sages. One opinion says, the way you read it, he slaughtered her, he killed his own daughter. The other opinion says, he locked her up in a house to pray to God. He said, I said that the first thing that would greet me would be designated to God, so he locked her up and designated her to God. Our sages say there was a conversation between Yiftach and his daughter. His daughter says to him, Jacob said to God, whatever you give me, I will give a tithe. I will give 1 out of 10. Do you find that he slaughtered one of his 10 children? Yiftach says, I took a vow. I can't. Yiftach wants to be extra pious. And that's why Chazal tell us, you want to be extra pious, be careful. Out of a desire for piety, a person can murder too. And so Yiftach, according to this understanding, murdered his own daughter, thinking he was being extra pious. Yiftach, a leader of the Jewish people, but he wasn't learned. And so the people of Ephraim come to Yiftach and they say, what's wrong with you? How come you went to war? We're going to burn your house over you. Why didn't you call us? You endangered us. You remember the people of Ephraim? They're the same ones who came to Gidon with the same claim. But Gidon was a modest person, so Gidon appeased them and made peace with them. Yiftach says, you know, we had trouble with the Ammonites, and where were you? You knew we needed help. We sent word that we needed help. You didn't come and help us. And when we saw you wouldn't help us, well, I risked my own life and God let me be victorious against them. Why'd you come now? And so Yiftach gathers his men and he wages civil war against Ephraim. And he decides he's going to annihilate them. And remember, the tribe of Ephraim were inside Israel. They had to cross the Jordan to come with this complaint to Yiftach. So what Yiftach does is he captures the waterways of the Jordan so that Ephraim can no longer cross back into the land of Israel, and they kill 42,000 Jews. Yiftach and his men kill 42,000 men from the tribe of Ephraim. The people of Ephraim would try to cross back home, but they had a problem with their pronunciation. So they'd say, could you just say Shibolet over there? And they'd say, they'd try to say Shibolet, but they couldn't say the sh. They'd say a s. They'd say an s instead of an sh. They'd say a sin instead of a shin. And then the border patrol would grab him and slaughter him. 42,000 men. What's the difference between a learned leader and a non-learned leader? Yiftach with his strive to be our leader, but without being learned, 42,000 men die and his own daughter dies. Yiftach leads us for 6 years and then he dies a gruesome death. Wherever he goes, a limb falls off. Our sages say this was a punishment for Yiftach because Yiftach was told that he could annul his vow by going to the rabbi, the chief rabbi Pinchas. And Yiftach says, I am the leader of the Jewish people, let Pinchas come to me. And Pinchas says, I am the chief rabbi, I am the prophet, let Yiftach come to me. So this is really a deeper machlokas than it seems on the surface. The Talmud tells us this was a machlokas in a later generation as well, a halachic machlokas. At the end of the day, God didn't approve of either side. And so God removed the prophecy from Pinchas. God said, Pinchas, you're right. Technically, Pinchas was right on one level. Technically, Yiftach was right on another level. Overtly, the prophet gives honor to the king. Subvertly, the king is supposed to give honor to the prophet. When they're in closed quarters, the king is supposed to honor the prophet. When they're openly, outwardly, the prophet is supposed to honor the king. So each one had an area where they were right. Pinchas lost his prophecy, and Yiftach died this gruesome death. But at the end of the day, between two people who were arguing who was right, there was a daughter of Israel lost. And God held that against them. After this, we have a man named Ivtzon. Ivtzon had 30 sons and 30 daughters. And he judged the Jewish people. Ivtzon is also known as Boaz. It is in his time that there is a man named Elimelech. The Jewish people are starting to talk about who's going to take the throne. And everyone thinks it is the noble Elimelech. Elimelech sees there is a famine in the land, and so he goes out to Moabite territories. His two sons, who are giants of the Jewish people, Mahlon and Chilion, they marry two Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth. They undergo a gear process, and then God punishes Elimelech. He dies, he loses his wealth. His children die, Mahlon and Chilion, and then his wife, the poor widow, impoverished, comes back to the land of Israel. Her two daughters-in-law say, we're coming back with you. Naomi says, don't bother, I am impoverished, what hope do you have? And they say, no, we're coming. And she says, why bother, go back, have a good life by your mother, you're both princesses, you're the daughters of the king, go back. And so Orpah goes back, and she sleeps with 100 Philistines that night, and she becomes pregnant and has the famous giant Goliath, who we will meet up with pretty soon. And Ruth says, no, I'm coming with you, I want to be Jewish, don't turn me back. After trying to turn her back, she is insistent that she wants to become Jewish. From here we learn that you try to dissuade a person who wants to do Giyul, and she comes back with her. And when she comes back with her, at that point, the halacha is not well known. Will she be able to marry a Jew or not? For she is a Moabite woman. As far as she knows, she cannot marry into the Jewish people. But nonetheless, she is insistent, I want to come back. And they are impoverished. They come back. Ivtzon, Boaz, his wife has just passed away. The poor man Ivtzon lost all his children, 30 sons and 30 daughters. They all passed away in his lifetime. Chazal say, every child he married, they'd have a custom that the people you invited to the wedding would bring a portion, and you'd bring a portion to their wedding. And Ivtzon says, you know, I'm never going to go to Manoach's wedding. Manoach was another great Torah scholar at that day. And Manoach, he had no kids. So Ivtzon said, I'm going to invite him to my weddings. He's never going to invite me to his. Ivtzon said, I'm not inviting him to my weddings. Manoach, the learned Manoach, giant in Torah, just like Ivtzon was a giant in Torah. And Ivtzon, Boaz, doesn't invite him. And even though there was a certain calculation which was correct on Boaz's part, where Boaz didn't want to hurt Manoach's feelings, but there was another calculation which was not perfectly correct on Boaz's part. And so God punishes Boaz, and Boaz loses all his children in his lifetime. When Boaz is an old man and he loses his wife, he's already lost all 30 sons have died in his lifetime, and all 30 daughters. Pretty tragic. And then he's coming out to the field, and he sees a Moabite girl who's come to collect, and he asks, what's going on? Who is this girl that's so modest that when she bends down, she bends at her knees so that her figure isn't seen so overtly? When she collects, she only collects what the poor are allowed to collect. And yet she doesn't know that she's not supposed to be hanging around the guys. She should be hanging around the girls. So they tell her, that's Ruth. That's the Moabite girl who came in with her mother-in-law. Instead of being a princess, she came to this impoverished state. And she's come to collect the the gifts that the poor are entitled to collect from the field. So Boaz calls her over and he says, listen here, I heard what a fantastic girl you are. You should know that the halacha is you're allowed to marry a young Jewish man, and you stick to my guy, girls, stick to my fields, things will be good for you. And he tells her you could eat when they eat, you could take from the food, you could take from the drink. And she thanks him profusely. She comes back home, her mother-in-law sees someone's taking care of her. She tells her, you stick with Boaz. 3 months pass, and it's time for the harvest, and Naomi tells Ruth, you go. It's time to convince Boaz he has to marry you. Boaz is an old man. And that night, Ruth slips down to the field, and Boaz awakens in the middle of the night. He sees a young girl next to him. He says, what's going on here? She tells him, it's me, it's Ruth. You're supposed to marry me. You're the next relative. My husband died without children. And Boaz sees that he's about to do something improper. Boaz takes a vow. He says, I swear, I'm not going to do anything tonight. I swear, he tells his own desire. He says, I swear by the name of God, nothing's happening here tonight. Tomorrow morning we'll go to court and we'll verify, because there is a relative who is a closer relative than I, and he should be the first to marry you, not me. And they go the next morning, and the other relative says, who knows, you know, you're saying today the halacha is she's permissible to enter the Jewish people. Tomorrow they might disagree, this halacha might come into question, and then they'll say, oh, my kids are inappropriate Jews, you can have her, Boaz. Boaz marries her, and they live together for one night. And that night Boaz dies. Imagine what kind of life Ruth had. Her first husband dies. She leaves the kingdom of her father. She comes to the Jewish people where she doesn't know if she's allowed to marry into the Jewish people. She marries the great leader of the Jewish people. She has one night of glory, and the next morning she wakes up to his funeral. But she's already pregnant with the Mashiach. She's already pregnant with the seed that will bring about the Davidic dynasty. So Ivtzan, our leader Boaz, he passes away without a living child. But he passes away leaving behind his seed. He passes away leaving Rus pregnant. And Boaz, Oved, Yishai, David, the whole Davidic dynasty comes from this Shidduch. After Boaz passes away, we have Elona Zvuloni. We don't know much about him. He judged us for 10 years. And then Avdon ben Hillel Apiratoni, who also had many children. I had 40 sons and 30 grandsons. They all rode on 70 wild animals, and he judged us for 8 years. And then the Jewish people continue sinning, and they're given over into the hands of the Philistines. Which leads us into the period of our last judge, which is the famous Samson. We are introduced first to his father, Manoach, and his wife, who cannot have children. And his wife must have been an extraordinary woman. Her name is Hatzlofonis. Doesn't say it in the Navi. And an angel appears to the woman. And he says, although you are barren and cannot have children, you will become pregnant and have a child, a son. And be careful. Don't drink wine. Don't eat things that are defiled. The child that's born, you're not allowed to cut his hair. He's going to be a Nazir. You guys familiar with the term Nazir? Nazir, a person who takes a vow, he will not drink wine or cut his hair. So he will be a Nazir for God from the stomach, from the womb, and he will begin saving the Jewish people from the Philistines. So the woman comes to her husband and she says, a man of God came to me. He looks like an angel. I didn't ask him where he's from. He didn't tell me his name. And he said, I'm going to be pregnant and shouldn't drink wine, shouldn't eat anything defiled. The child will be a Nazir. Manoach prays to God and says, please send back that prophet, that man of God, and let him tell us what to do. And God accepts Manoach's prayer. That's pretty phenomenal. Must have been a pretty big tzaddik. God already told her what she's supposed to do. And yet, God sends the angel again. And again, her husband is not with her. It's not a coincidence. The angel comes. And the woman is an amazing wife. So she says, wait 1 second. She runs back to her husband. And she says, the man I told you about, he's back. So Manoach runs after his wife. And here Chazal have a disagreement. What does it mean Manoach went after his wife? A learned person doesn't walk behind a woman. The nature of a man is that when he's walking behind a woman, he's going to notice her figure, he's going to be aroused. It's not considered modest to walk directly behind a woman, even if it's his own wife. So Chazal said, either Manoach was not learned. One understanding is he was in Amoritz. What kind of person walks directly behind his wife? That's not the modest way to walk. Remember, we discussed this in our class at the Kotel. being aroused is normal, living married life, all that is perfect and beautiful. But there's a proper time and place for everything. And for a guy to be walking when he's en route to do something pretty holy, and at that moment he's walking directly behind his wife, that's not exactly what we think he should be doing. The other understanding is that he went after his wife's advice. Doesn't mean he literally walked behind her. It means he went after his advice. And it seems that the rabbis went with that understanding. Manoach is listed as one of the great rabbis who passed on the tradition of the oral law. We have a listing from Moshe down to the end of the Mishnah, down to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and Manoach appears in that listing. So it seems that the rabbis went with the understanding that he was one of the great rabbis of his time. And he comes and he says, "Are you the man who spoke to the woman?" And he says, "It is I." And he says, "Okay, what are we supposed to do?" And the angel says, "Everything I told her, she shouldn't eat anything that comes from grapes. She shouldn't drink any wine or anything that's like that. She shouldn't eat anything defiled. Everything I told her." So Manoach asks the angel, "Maybe we'll bring a sacrifice before you." And the angel says, "If you hold me up, I won't eat your bread. If you want to bring a sacrifice, bring it to God." Manoach doesn't know it's an angel. And Manoach says, "What's your name? When your prophecy comes true, we'll honor you." And the angel says, "Why should you ask me my name? My name is beyond you. It keeps changing. Depending on my job, God changes my name." So Manoach brings a sacrifice to God, and the angel goes up in the flame. When the flame goes up from the food, the angel goes up. Manoach and his wife fall on their face, and Manoach realizes it's an angel. He tells his wife, "We're going to die. We saw an angel face to face." And the woman says, "No. If God accepted our sacrifice and he showed us this and he told us this message, obviously we're not going to die." And the woman gives birth to a boy and they name him Shimshon, Samson. The boy is crippled in both his legs. The boy cannot walk properly. And the child grows up and God blesses him and he is blessed with limitless seed. He has unlimited stamina. His maleness is beyond human capacity. And God starts appearing upon him, and he becomes the greatest sage, quite possibly in all times. Samson was the only person in Jewish history that Chazal tell us about him. He could single-handedly judge the Jewish people. He didn't need a court. He was such a tremendous Talmud Chacham that Samson was able to single-handedly sit in court, and he didn't need a court of 71 elders. He was the only one whose judgment is compared to the judgment of God. So Samson is our prophet. He's going to be our leader. And he's unusually strong. He's growing up with a handicap, crippled in both his legs. And we'll pick up here, Bezlachim, next week.